Do you want to look into a crystal ball with 20/20 vision? You've come to the right place. It's cricket, only better.
What an innings, what a player. Take a bow, Ben Stokes.
Brian Charles Lara becomes the first man in the history of the game to register a score of 400.
Six sixes in an over. Yuvraj Singh finishes things off in style.
England have won the World Cup by the barest of margins.
Betfair Betting Podcast presents Cricket, Only Better.
Hello, I'm Ed Hawkins, betting.betfair cricket correspondent, here to say that Cricket, Only Better, has been unleashed into your ears once more. That's 3 weeks in a row. It's the sort of winning percentage rate that we try to uncover here on this podcast to help make you money on the betting markets.
And I'm Sam Collins, journalist, filmmaker, armchair fan, and clearly not worthy of a title on the show. Maybe data denier, perhaps.
Betfair contrarian. I think you've only been doing it 3 weeks, so you need to perhaps earn your stripes first.
I'm a human being, Ed, and just treating me like an armchair fan. I mean, yeah, fine. Anyway, we don't need
I'll speak to HR.
Didn't need to air our dirty linen, because we don't have time for that, because we've got so much goodness.
Jam-packed.
So much. Come on, what have we got?
We've got Paul Krishnamurti, pro gambler and betting.betfair colleague, who he does have a title. He's here to provide in-running advice on the T20 chaos when all around are losing their heads. How do you win money in play?
Cold, hard cash. Indeed, we also have Freddie Wild, Cricviz analyst, talking about the first T20 between New Zealand and England in Christchurch, and a bit of Australia versus Sri Lanka from the Gabba on Wednesday. And little Master fans might want to set their alarm clocks for this one. A very, very, very special Mythbuster, a triple very special Mythbuster. And even more, we have the Cricketnomics top charts. Ed has been beavering away for you guys on that one.
Blood coming from my fingers and ears.
I don't need to hear about that. Friday morning, 1 a.m. UK time, Christchurch. The scene is set for New Zealand versus the Vitality Blast All-Stars first T20 international. New Zealand are favourites at 1.8 versus 2.0, or 2 as some people call it, England on the exchange. Sportsbook has 8-11 New Zealand versus 11-10. England number 2 in the world, New Zealand number 6. What can we glean from any of this, Ed, given that England have left most of their team at home?
Well, you might be surprised that England aren't favourites, considering they're number 2 in the world and they've won 10 of the last 15 on the head-to-heads. But the problem with this English team is it's experimental. It is an all-star blast 11. There's no Jason Roy. There's no Ben Stokes. There's no Jofra Archer. There's no Joe Root. I don't happen to think that's an actual problem for England, because Root may disappear from this T20 team. But Tom Banton, Matt Parkinson, Pat Brown, who have all been exceptional for Somerset, Lancashire, Worcestershire, respectively, in the blast. Can they make that step up? And we'll be talking to Freddie Wild about that a bit later. But New Zealand have got team changes of their own. There's no Kane Williamson, for example.
On his hip, again.
Exactly. And people might think, oh, that's a blow for New Zealand. But New Zealand have won 50% of their T20 games when Williamson has been available, and they've won 63% without him. And a lot of analysts will say that Williamson is not a T20 player and he costs teams balls, he wastes time in the middle, and he puts their team in trouble. And we saw a lot of that in the Indian Premier League over the last few seasons when he's been playing for Sunrisers Hyderabad. So
interesting, because he's the last person I would want as an opposition. You know, if I'm watching England and I see Kane Williamson at the crease when they're chasing the target, I would be desperate for him to be out. So it's interesting what you're talking about.
So your analysts would say, let's keep Kane Williamson in for as long as possible, because he's going to take up balls and overs and the run rate is going to go down, or it's not going to be going where it should be going if a more destructive player is at the crease, or somebody with boundary percentage. Big boundary percentage is what the data people really love these days.
Okay. Interesting looking at that England top order in the first T20 warm-up this morning, because looking at that top order, apart from Tom Banton, who Wikipedia neither confirms nor denies whether he is any relation of Pato,
That one's going over my head, I'm afraid. I can only reference percentage points data implied probability.
Just focus on data. You're just embarrassing yourself here. Bairstow, Vince, Denley. That reads to me very much like a England sort of, you know, test number sort of 3-4 sort of trade, you know, shootout basically, which is a bizarre thing to be saying for the T20.
It does sound bizarre, but I suspect you may well
especially
be right.
Especially in this new age of supposedly defensive cricket that we're going to see. Yeah. I mean, I know that I'm being spurious with that. But
well, as soon as Bairstow made 70-odd, Ed Smith was talking up Bairstow for a test match return. He's only got, you know, some easy runs against a warm-up 11.
It's unlike Ed Smith to be talking to the media, the people's peacock. It's an absolutely extraordinary interview that he... Well, not the interview is fine, it's fairly anodyne, but it's just...
Which you happen to have.
In Sunday Times, I'm staring at it right now. It's just this extraordinarily self-conscious photograph of him staring right down the lens with a selection of unbelievably cannily placed literary greats. Like,
indeed, War and Peace is my favourite. Just over the left shoulder there, winking coquettishly.
Screaming, saying, look at chapter 4 for the secrets on how to annihilate South Africa.
Has there ever been a more attractive chairman of selectors, do you think? David Graveney, with his red currant jelly, ruddy complexion, doesn't have a...
I'm not here to talk about that stuff, Ed. What I want to know is to what extent he trusts the data. That would be very interesting to find out.
Well, he is very data heavy. Perhaps we could try and get him on next week. Well, I hope he's actually working out what difference it will make with New Zealand not having Trent Bolt for the first three matches and Lockie Ferguson for the first three only, instead of wading through Hilary Mantel's latest.
I think he's probably freaking out because someone's just texted him and told him that there's a Jilly Cooper in the bottom right of that picture.
Shall we get Freddie Wild on?
Yes.
How do we make sense of this series, Freddie? Because we've got players missing from both sides. But how are England setting up for this one? Because they're outsiders to win the first T20.
Yeah, well, as you said, they're missing, I think it's six or seven. If you include Root, I think it's seven frontline players. I mean, Archer's obviously a huge miss as well. They're very much testing out their bench strength. And for that, and because of that, it's quite hard to tell how they're going to go. It's quite hard to tell how they're going to structure up. I mean, we've seen they had a warm-up game a couple of days ago and they opened with Banton and Bairstow. They had Curran, I think, batting at six or maybe seven. I guess it's a little bit difficult to call because, well, there are three clear debutants, Banton, Shakib Mahmood and Pat Brown, who will be, I'm sure, will all make their debuts in the series. T20 internationals are quite hard to gauge at the best of times, given how rarely they are played, and the absence of England's key players and some new players debuting. And then obviously with New Zealand as well, they've not gone with the full strength side. Williamson's out. Bolt and Ferguson are coming and going. So, yeah, it's a difficult one to call.
They're putting players into the squad who have done very well domestically. You mentioned Tom Banton, Pat Brown, the Worcestershire bowler, who I'm sure you're a big fan of data-wise, is coming in. Shakib Mahmood, Matt Parkinson. Can these guys force their way into an actual starting 11? Because that England T20 11 seems to be pretty fixed.
Yeah, I mean, well, I think Banton's probably got the toughest task to force his way in. England have got a surplus of top order options at the moment. It's actually, you know, it's difficult enough working out which of the current players they're going to get into that team, let alone when you bring in Banton. I mean, Banton is a fantastic talent, and I think he's definitely got something about him. And if he was to, you know, have a really good series, then he would put himself in contention. But, you know, at the moment, England have got the choice between, they've got Butler, Bairstow, Roy, Banton. I mean, Hales is also someone who is obviously out of favour at the moment, but on ability alone, he should probably be in these discussions as well. In the bowling department, I think there are opportunities there for those three. I mean, Rashid's had some fitness issues recently. If he's fit, then Rashid will be in the squad without a doubt for the World Cup next year. But there are, as you said, there's some fitness issues around. I think his shoulder's causing him some trouble. And I think actually, you know, Parkinson on numbers alone is arguably as good as Rashid, but obviously he's not got that sort of credit in the bank that Rashid's got. So I think Parkinson's fortunes will depend upon Rashid's fitness. And then we've got Brown and Mahmood. I mean, I think Mahmood's probably got the best chance of forcing his way in. England could probably still do with a new ball bowler. This series, they've let David Willey's not playing. It's unclear whether that's him being rested or whether he's been dropped, but Sam Curran's come in as the other sort of left-arm swinger. But there probably is a spot in the side for a new ball wicket taker, and it's sort of Sam Curran's swing against Saki Mahmood's pace and a bit of movement as well. So they're sort of auditioning for one spot, I think. And then Pat Brown's probably there as a reserve for Chris Jordan, sort of as a death bowler. I mean, Harry Gurney is another bowler who's done really well domestically, who I'm a little bit surprised has not been given a go.
Yeah, you mentioned Tom Banton at the top there. He's a character who is loved by cricket punters because he had a 46% win rate on the top bat market for Somerset. He was striking at 161 last season. What are the chances that he's going to be able to come in and reflect that form in international level? What's the crossover like between domestic performances and internationals?
Well, with the Blast, probably not much. I mean, the Blast is one of the weaker T20 tournaments in the world. We've got a ranking system at Cricviz. We rank it below the side Mushtaq Ali, which is India's second tier domestic tournament. And that's simply a fact of the fact that you've got 18 teams, and as a result, the talent level there is diluted a lot. That's not to say Banton isn't a really talented player. I think, you know, you don't need to know cricket that well to watch him bat and think this guy's got something about him. He clearly has immense talent, and I think it wouldn't be a surprise if he was to translate his form into the international arena at some stage. I wouldn't be backing him to do it immediately, and that's not to say he won't, but I think it'd be really impressive if he was to be able to go straight in at this level and perform. And, you know, the New Zealand have got a really strong bowling attack. Even the other day in the warm-up game yesterday, Lachie Ferguson, who's going to be playing in, I think, the first couple of matches of the series, he took 3 for. I think he might even have got Banton out. You know, and someone of Ferguson's pace and calibre, Banton's probably not faced much of in county cricket. You get a lot of fairly weak bowlers in the Blast.
Tom Banton's 16-5 with Betfair Sportsbook for top England run score in that first T20 on Friday. Jordy Best says the 11-4 favourite has a lot to prove and has already got runs under his belt in the warm-up. What do you think is the chances of Bairstow going well in this series? Because he's a man who likes to be angry, isn't he?
Yeah, no, well, I think we probably will see Bairstow scoring runs. He's, you know, we all know how talented he is. It's about him sort of applying that consistently, I guess. And I think actually, you know, he's evolved. I think if anything, you could maybe make a case that T20 is now his best format. I mean, he had a phenomenal IPL. He really was brilliant. And I think that proving yourself at that level bodes really well for them taking that across to international cricket, where a lot of the time the standard in the IPL is sometimes higher than you'll get against some international teams. Maybe not against New Zealand, who've got a really strong bowling attack, as I said. But you know, Bairstow having sort of had a stop start to his T20 career, rather, he has, you know, now he's now sort of proven that he's got the ability to play at this, or play in this format. And I expect he'll be a key player for England across the next 12 months in the lead up to the World Cup. And as a result, bringing into the equation his Red Bull emission, you'd think that, as you said, he's got a point to prove, and I expect him to do pretty well in this series.
Let's just have a quick look at the Kiwis. Martin Guptill, Colin Munro, two well-known players, possibly could be criticised as being flat-track bullies. But a player who will interest people is Tim Seifert, who's 4-1 for top Kiwi run scorer. Could open the batting. How are they going to sort their order? They're going to go Guptill, Munro opening, or is Munro going to drop to number 3 with Seifert joining Guptill at top?
Yeah, well, it'll be interesting to see. They could do. I mean, Guptill will be opening, and it will be one of Seifert or Munro with him. It'll be interesting to see how they go. He's a good young player. He's sparky, as are Guptill and Munro, and on their day they can be particularly destructive. So, you know, New Zealand always seem to have those players at the top of the order. I think it's like Jesse Ryder in the past, Brendan McCullum, even going further back in one day cricket, guys like Nathan Astle. They've always had sort of guys who, on their day, if they get going, can be really destructive. And on, you know, on what are generally pretty good tracks in New Zealand, small boundaries, You know, don't be surprised to see some high scoring games with the firepower that they've got at the top of the order, plus the firepower obviously in England's batting as well.
Death bowling is really key, and it's important when you're playing the top bowler markets to know if your guy is bowling at the death. In this New Zealand England series, Lockie Ferguson, presumably he's going to be bowling at the death. Trent Bolt, presumably when he actually does play. Owen Morgan's not afraid to bowl Rashid at the death, is he?
No, yeah, he's not. I've just had a quick look as well. While you've been chatting there, just looking at guys in both the England and New Zealand series and then the Australian-Sri Lanka series also on at the moment, and looked at who bowls most often at the death. Pat Brown is right up there. It'll be interesting to see if England deploy him in a similar way as was to have Brown bowls both top and tail. He bowls in the power play and the death. He bowls a lot of the death. That means he might take some, you know, he might get some cheaper wickets, I suppose, in that phase. Jordan and Curran are also guys who stand out as death bowlers. And then obviously Malinga and Udana from Sri Lanka. These are guys who bowl about 37, 38% of their overs in the last four or five. And as we said, that means they're more likely to be taking wickets because batsmen are going to be attacking them. So top wicket-taking markets, guys like Malinga, Brown, Jordan, Curran, Udana, and then Stark as well is someone who's there. They're likely to do well for that reason.
Top wicket taker for New Zealand in that first T20, Lockie Ferguson favourite, 10-3. England's market, Pat Brown, 3-1 favourite. So sportsbook are on the money really with that one. Chris Jordan, 7-2. Sam Curran, 7-2. Let's have a quick look at this Australia versus Sri Lanka mismatch going on. We've got another game to wade through. David Warner beat Sri Lanka by one run. How to make sense of this and how to find individual players, Freddie, who are going to shine on the top bat and top bowler markets, because the match odds is a complete waste of time because Sri Lanka have reverted to type after their Pakistan surprise.
Yeah, well, I mean, it does seem that way. I mean, I think Sri Lanka are an interesting team because they always seem to have a few players capable of causing, you know, other teams damage on their day. You know, their batting lineup is littered with them, really. Guys like Kusal Pereira and Nirushan Dikwela, and they had recently the Fernandos have come through the ranks. And obviously with the ball, they've got Malinga and then this new leg spinner, Wanindu Hasaranga. Hasaranga, who had a fantastic series against Pakistan. These are guys who sort of almost like, they're a team littered with X-factor players, but no sort of coherent strategy or no anchor player to tie them together. And as a result, as you said, they really struggle from a result standpoint. I mean, it's hard to look beyond guys like Warner and Maxwell at the top, especially given the fact that you can't see Sri Lanka taking many wickets, that they stand out. And then, I mean, Stark, I think, is not going to be playing in the second match. I think his brother is getting married. So there's no Mitchell Stark, which I suppose will give a chance to someone like Billy Stanlake or maybe Sean Abbott, who was a surprise pick when AJ Tye was ruled out at the weekend. Maybe that gives Pat Cummins a better chance of being top wicket taker with Stark gone. Cummins bowled in the middle overs the other day. Maybe he'll take the new ball. We'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, it's particularly confusing with Sri Lanka because they have such a huge turnover of players, and then they're also calling their players by different names half the time. So just to just to clear this up for some people out there, PWH De Silva, as per Crick Info, is Sri Lanka's Wanindu Hasaranga. Now, Wanindu Hasaranga was the guy that raised Pakistan. He's 9-2 for top wicket taker. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. He's sixth favourite on that market. I think Betfair Sportsbook might have been confused by the different names going around. Okay, he's only played 7 matches, but he's got a strike rate of 12.3, which is a filter over the last 2 years. But that's the best of any player involved in this series.
Well, I mean, I was certainly very excited to see him ahead of the first game after watching from afar as how he tore Pakistan apart. You know, whenever a new bowler comes onto the scene, especially from Sri Lanka, and particularly a wrist spinner, it's always very exciting. So I was keen to see how he went. And he, like all of the Sri Lankan bowlers, took a bit of a hammering. I think Australia clearly targeted him as, you know, someone who's inexperienced, and they got after him early on. But wrist spinners are always in the game from a wicket perspective. They traditionally have lower strike rates than other bowlers because they are attacking by nature. I mean, I don't know, the Gabba probably doesn't suit him particularly well. It's a hard, bouncy, true pitch where normally fast bowlers do better. I mean, someone who might be worth keeping an eye on from a Sri Lanka perspective is Lahiru Kumara. He didn't play in the first game.
Sri Lanka's bowling attack looked really one-dimensional in Adelaide. They left out Isaru Udana, the left armer, and then Kumara is a right-arm quick who can bowl really fast.
Kumara, 7-2, Betfair Sportsbook top Sri Lanka wicket taker. Freddie, thanks ever so much for coming on. Everybody's favourite time of the week. People are on the edge of their seat, wherever they may be.
We literally had a suggestion for Mythbuster this week, which feels like a massive, like these shows are all about viewer interaction. So Crick_Rahul, thank you for what you said, those kind words. Next Monday, Mythbuster - Sachin Tendulkar.
Never heard of him.
Then he says, good show again, like the first one. Love this podcast.
Oh, he's hit the source hard.
Is he okay?
We check him. Someone do a check on Crick Rahul, please.
And see that.
You okay, hon?
Where's the IP address is the same as the Betfair headquarters. So anyway, yeah, well, look, what am I doing? I'm discrediting our audience. This is ridiculous. But my major point is to the other people who listen to this, send us some feedback and all that stuff. We love it. We'll read some of it out.
Do you want to explain what Mythbuster is?
Yes, okay. Mythbuster is where we analyse a legendary player's record on the top bat or bowler markets. I say we, I mean Ed. Ed gets into the data. Were these guys winners or were they losers? Reputations mean nothing to Ed Hawkins. He's like Shredder. He destroys.
Wreck the rep.
Well, so far he's destroyed. What will it be this week?
Destroyed Don Bradman and Shane Warne so far. But Sachin Tendulkar has proved a bit of a tricky one because it's been hard to pin down an average price over his test career for top India run scorer in the first innings. And the Betfair Sportsbook boys, by the sounds of it, have had a heated debate.
Indeed. And the Betfair boys, they don't give me a title, but they give me a quote to read out. And so that people can delineate, I'm going to use like as though you were typing out a text to read out what they've said. Okay. Tendulkar would have played alongside a number of other very good players. And so, even though he might be as good as the likes of player who were 6-4 or so, he was never as much of a standout. He would have played along the likes of Dravid, Ganguly, Laxman and Sehwag, all of which top players and lots of competition for that market.
I loved the intonation on Sehwag. I thought you absolutely nailed that. That was beautiful. So what was Tendulkar's average price over his 200 test career? Bang on about 10-3. That's what we've come up with. And if you could give me a drum roll, Sam,
drum roll.
I'm going to tell you whether he would have been a winner or a loser if you'd bet him in every single test match of his career.
How many test matches did he play? 200.
200.
Wow.
And you'd have been up or down, up or down, up or down.
Well, I've got to believe I've got to believe. I'm going to say up.
Up by a massive £1.80. So Tendulkar was good. We can safely say that Tendulkar was pretty decent at batting, unlike Bradman or unlike Warne at bowling.
Just busting that myth. There you go again, just creating waves. I think this is mainly because you're so worried about the angst that's going to come your way if you prove that Tendulkar is rubbish.
Yeah, if we'd done average odds of 3-1, he'd have lost you 150 quid.
But so he won 46 times over a 200 test career. So really that's 46 out of 200 because you only play first innings, right?
Yeah, only first innings, and there's a £10 level stakes.
Wow.
The little master indeed.
So who is Ed Hawkins going to burnish or banish next week? That's up to you guys. So we would really appreciate some more suggestions for Mythbuster next week.
Yes.
Ian Austin, what about that?
You could get in touch at Cricket Betting. Don't ask for Ian Austin.
So, Ed, in this short format special, the question is how best to bet and win when the game is underway. Wickets are falling, sixes are soaring. Certainly for me, it all gets quite overwhelming when I'm trying to get a sense of how the game is going. But fortunately, help is at hand.
Indeed. So with so much T20 going on at the moment, we thought we would get a guru on to give us some assistance. It's pro gambler, cricket analyst, Paul Krishnamurthy and betting.betfair colleague. He's on the line now. Paul, welcome.
Hi, Ed.
Now, your top tip for betting in play on a T20?
Well, the first golden rule, I think, is if you're starting a trade, it's to bet odds against. It's to bet bigger than evens. Because the very nature of cricket is that momentum switches all the time. I would say maybe more than any other sport. And so the key to a good trade is to predict when that momentum is going to switch and preempt it. Because you're betting odds against it above evens, you're taking much less risk and it doesn't require that much of a dramatic turnaround to put you in profit. Now, I look to find particular trigger points for when we might be due a switch. Now, when the market might be biased one way. So a classic example in T20 is backing a team after losing a wicket. That could apply to the match market or the runs market. Because, you know, very often you will see a situation in a T20 match where 180 or more is even money. The wicket goes and it goes 5 to 2, 3.5.
Yeah.
So in reality, you've only lost one ball because most teams bat very deep nowadays. Most tail-enders can hit boundaries and it might actually help the runs, that wicket going, because the next guy might come in and hit three quick boundaries. That could apply to the outright market because, once again, teams chasing, they lose a wicket, it looks like they're now in the dumps, but actually the game just carries on, you've only lost one ball.
The overreaction of the market, particularly in those first power play overs of a first innings of a match, you'll get a lot of joy there, wouldn't you, Paul? Because people expect that run rate to continue.
Absolutely agree. And you often see situations, don't you, where par starts at 160 and then within four overs it's up to 190, 200.
Great. What's your next tip?
Well, related to the last one again is the runs market. And that would be basically to back the extremes. You know, they happen all the time. In the CPL recently, there were many, many games where you were getting big scores in excess of 200. Now, often, I think in one game, I got something like 22-1 on 210 or more before the game started. It ended up 245. Mm-hmm. You can get a very cheap trade. And as you were saying about the way the market overreacts, during an inning, it more often than not, the par total flirts with the extremes, either really low or really high, even if it does ultimately end up around par. And so what I will tend to do is, if I've taken a view pre-match on an innings, let's say I'm going unders, I will have my main bet, which might be laying 150 plus at 1.3. But if I've done that, I'll also go in at 135 and under, or 130, 125, really short, 107, 1.1. Because, as I say, the very nature of it is that there's a good chance at some point in running it will be a really strong position.
I really like that tip with New Zealand and England playing on small grounds and, of course, the ongoing Australia dominance over Sri Lanka, so there could be some big scores there. Paul, you can come again.
So before we love and leave you for another week, I'm going to hand you over to the betting.betfair cricket correspondent, the self-appointed, his parents christened him Ed Hawkins, for his Cricketonomics tops and bottoms.
These are the most reliable top batters and top bowlers in World T20 cricket.
Baby, come back with me colour TV and a moderately successful international debut series in the T20.
Beautiful. Cricketonomics tops coming at you. These are the most reliable T20 batters and bowlers in the world. Batsman first at number three, Big Willie style. It's Stuart Williams, 42.8% for Zimbabwe.
Do you have to do these preposterous intros?
Yes, people like it. Rohit me up at 45% is Sharma for India. And at number one, Babar Azam. A magician's favourite word with a 54% win rate over the last year, although he let us down horrifically against Sri Lanka. Top bowlers now. Number three, Adil Rashid at 42.8%. And there's nothing-ish about Sodhi, the Kiwi spin magician, 42.8%. And at number one, Rashid Khan, the Afghan genius, 57.1%.
Just my face is just screwed. If you could see the wince that's going on the side of the table.
Sam is absolutely loathing this. Next week, I'm going to make you do it.
So that's the end of our show. I can't believe it. We're here already again. The end of another week. Thanks very much for listening. Do leave us some feedback somewhere. In fact, here's an idea for you. Leave us some feedback wherever you feel like it. SoundCloud, Google Maps, iTunes, Deliveroo, Guardian comments section. If you can, in fact, the more spurious place that you could leave feedback on our show, the better. And if you can leave just on a comment anywhere, screenshot it, send us a picture to at Cricket Betting on Twitter, and we'll read out the most preposterous places that you've left excellent feedback for this show.
Yes, and do join us next week to find out how we got on with trying to entice Ed Smith onto the show after
he realised there was no opportunity. We said, Ed Hawkins can post a picture of you on Twitter. But he realised there was no photo shoot. He wasn't that keen to come on. Yes, but so in the meantime, while you're waiting for all this, you can read Ed Hawkins' previews on betting.betfair.com. Read the sage words of the self-styled Betfair cricket correspondent. What else should we say? We should say, please.
I don't know, but I've got to go because my wife has just messaged me saying, where's the baby's bottle?
We should say, above all of this, is please bet responsibly. Only bet with money that is yours, and don't bet if you're not over 18 years old.
And only bet with money you can afford to lose. Till next time.